Welcome to our Worldwide Network for Success, WWYNS, your dedicated business radio station. The mission of our station is to help you learn how successful managers and business owners direct their businesses, capitalize on opportunities, and overcome adversity. Our objective is to help you understand and apply their insights, then use your expertise in your own business or job so that you can become more successful.
Welcome, this is Joe Camaro with Your Network for Success. Today we're going to be talking with Don Graebner, a real estate appraiser with 28 years of experience, specializing in tax assessment reduction for commercial properties in Western New York. And the focus of our program is minimizing your real property taxes. Welcome, Don.
Thank you, Joe. Nice to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I think we're going to find some very interesting information today. So we've kind of tipped off the listener to the basic idea, but when someone asks you about what you do, how do you describe the business you're in?
Okay, well, I'm an appraiser, a real estate appraiser, and have been in the business 28 years. The first 15 years or so, I was doing basic commercial real estate appraisal. That would be for mortgages and for things like that. About 12 or 13 years ago, my business focus changed to representing property owners in tax assessment appeals to make sure that they're not paying too much in property taxes, basically. I really felt the market needed that service and that I was particularly well qualified with my appraisal experience. So when people ask me what I do, I say I'm an appraiser and I do regular appraisal work, but my niche, my specialty is representing property owners in tax assessment appeals, making sure they're not paying too much in property taxes.
So I guess in essence, can you describe your organization's mission?
Sure. My company is called Real Property Services, and I'm a sole proprietor. But what I do is guarantee my clients will get an answer that they will like. And I always tell them, I can only give you two answers, but they're both good news. One is, I've evaluated your assessment and tax situation, and I believe I can lower your assessment and tax liability. So that's good news. The other good news is I reviewed your situation and I want to let you know that you can rest assured you're not paying too much in property taxes. You are fairly assessed. Many times I tell my clients you're favorably assessed. You wouldn't want to go in and challenge us because you're in a good position right now, so leave it alone. But that's really the mission, is to make sure my clients understand what their tax liability is all about and how to make sure they're not paying too much in taxes, and they'll get my professional opinion as to where they stand.
Great. When we were talking a little bit before the program, you mentioned that you had done some other kinds of things that might help a property owner or a business owner. What are those other things, other services you provide?
Sure. Well, as an appraiser for all these years, I'm a New York State certified licensed appraiser. I've done everything from mortgage financing appraisals to condemnation work when utilities run easements over properties. I've represented both the utilities and the property owners. I do things for people who just want partnership interests to be formalized based on real estate value, estate work. There's many, many reasons to have appraisals done, and there's various levels of appraisals. So anytime there's a valuation issue, I feel like I can add expert advice.
So it sounds like you have quite a range of customers, but is there a particular kind of customer you do most of your business with?
Well, that's an interesting question, Joe, because over my many years of representing folks in the tax assessment field, my clientele is quite varied. It's really anyone that has a responsibility to pay real estate taxes. So yes, I do represent residential property owners, and they, I think, are some of my best clients in that they might not have an idea even how they're assessed. Remember, some towns assess at a partial value. They don't even have 100% of value. So already property owners are confused about how much they should be paying in taxes, whether their value is appropriate, if they lived in a house a long time. So that's one part of my business. I try to focus on commercial and industrial properties, obviously because they're larger, their tax obligations are higher, and I have positioned my company to be an advocate for my client, and I charge a contingency fee. I charge one half of what I can save property owners in their first year of tax savings. So it's a win-win situation. There's no risk to my clients at all. I assume all that risk, and I have to deal with that accordingly, but it's worked out very well over the years. So really, my best client is the client who's not sure if they're paying too much in taxes, and they come to me for the answer.
So even if I just own one piece of property that I'm not sure about and I were to call you, you would kind of talk with me and give me some advice or ask me the right questions so you could help me make a good decision?
Exactly. And that's, quite frankly, my typical client is the single, you know, real estate holder. And they call me, and I try to, through a conversation, 5 minutes on the phone and then maybe a little computer work as we're talking, understand why it is they're coming to me. What was the signal to them that they might have an assessment or tax problem? I can tell pretty quickly when people start asking me questions or telling me their story whether they're on track or not. And that's probably what I do most of my day, is get people on track first, and then we determine whether their case might have some validity, and then we take it from there.
Great. I know we'll talk about what the next step is after that, but let's think about how you got started in your business. I know you made an evolution. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, great. About, 13 to 15 years ago, I forget exactly, as a commercial appraiser, I was asked to sit on the assessment review board for the town of Amherst, where I live. And the assessment review board assembles once a year, and that's the board that listens to property owners come in and file grievances against their assessed value. And after 3 days of listening to property owners, that would be residential, commercial, industrial, vacant land, all types of properties, it became very clear to me that people, property owners, needed help going through this process. They may have had good cases, but they weren't presenting them properly, and therefore they were getting denied. And what I found was that they would frequently come in and start the conversation off. Already I knew they were on the wrong track. They would start by saying, "My taxes are so high," and I'd say, "Wait a minute, this isn't a tax issue." Or they would say, "My assessment just increased 29%. I'd say, "That's not the basis of the argument." Or, "My neighbor's assessments are all lower than mine." Or, "This is my third increase in 5 years." Or, "My brother-in-law in North Carolina has a bigger house and he's paying half of what I pay up here." And, or here's the biggest one, Joe. They would say, "This is a money grab by the town of Amherst. The town just needs more revenue, so they're raising everybody's assessment." So I'll ask you and our listeners this very poignant question and see what you think. If the town of Amherst or any municipality doubled every assessed value in the town right now, how much more tax revenue would they raise over the next year?
Well, I heard your presentation earlier, so I already know the answer.
You know the answer.
And I own a piece of property in Amherst as well.
Well, there you go.
I know. Tell us.
Well, it's interesting because 99.9% of the people don't follow this at first, but they will. The answer is zero. The town that raises assessments, doubles the assessed value in this case, will not collect one more dime of tax revenue by raising the assessments. And now people are saying, "Well, how can that be? My assessment got increased and I paid more in taxes." No, here's how the process works. The amount of money to be raised by any taxing authority, whether it's the town, the county, the school district, the amount of money they raise is based on the budget that they set. So if they set a budget of $50 million, that is what they are going to collect. It's collected by virtue of distributing tax bills based on assessed values of the properties in that municipality. So if you double every assessed value, you merely cut the tax rate in half, but you collect the exact same amount of dollars. So that's where I try to get people. When I originally said people that came in and said, "My taxes are," I stopped them because this is not a tax issue. What I do is a value-based issue. I help people determine whether their assessment on their property reflects what they could reasonably sell it for, the fair market value. That's what you're supposed to be assessed based on, your fair market value. So it's not a tax issue. It's not a legal issue. It's a value issue, and that's what we have to get our clients to focus on.
Great. So the skill that's required to do your business sounds like it's a lot based on a lot of knowledge and experience. Anything else?
Well, correct, and especially, Joe, when you work on a contingency basis. I think it's a wonderful business strategy. I think it's a wonderful relationship I have with my clients because it's a win-win. There's no pressure on their part financially until we're rewarded, hopefully, in the end. So it works very well. But the onus is on me to determine very quickly in a relationship with a client whether I feel this case is worth pursuing. And obviously, the client wants an explanation if I feel it's not worth pursuing, and I'm very happy to give that to him. But that's where my expertise and experience in real estate appraisal has to come in very quickly into the beginning of our conversations, because I can't take a case too far that doesn't have any merit.
So let's focus on this idea of value for a second. How do you help me determine, or how do you determine the value of the property that we're talking about, whatever property it is?
Okay, and that's the interesting question. Every property is unique, and here's what I say to every assessor I meet with or board of assessment review when I'm doing my presentations. There is no one value on a property. No one can say, my property is worth this amount of money. If you had 10 appraisers appraise any property, you're probably going to get 10 different numbers. Now, granted, they should be within a reasonable range, but that's my point. Every property has a reasonable range of value. As an advocate for my client, what I'm trying to do is get their assessment to the lowest possible end of that reasonable range. Now, I have to determine going in from quick analysis what I think a reasonable range of property value is for this property, for my client, and then determine based on what their assessment is, if there's a spread that is suitable for me to make enough money to invest my time and effort into the case. And sometimes I'll tell the customers, you know, you might have a chance, but the odds aren't good enough for me to get involved, or the spread isn't quite large enough. I suggest that you go through the process on your own. You have nothing to lose, but I wouldn't be able to get involved. But usually when there's a case, I'm able to get involved at some level.
Well, let's say I was interested in your service, and you told me that, and I said, okay, I'd like you to coach me. Can I retain your services on an hourly basis if I wanted you to coach me?
Absolutely. I do that quite a bit, and thank you for bringing that up. So sometimes, and especially I'll get phone calls from quite a distance away, and I just can't cover that market area because of the time involved, and sometimes even my knowledge of the market isn't, you know, what it would be if we were more local. But I'm able to help those folks with what I call the three steps of the grievance process. One is the informal process, when you sit down and talk to the assessor early on in the season and see if you can just come to a negotiated agreement. Sometimes it's merely educating the assessor on what you really have in your property, your house, your commercial building, that they're not aware of. The second step is the formal assessment review board, which meets once a year. And then the third step is, if you don't get the results you feel you deserve at the review board, you can challenge it legally. It's still, in my opinion, not a legal issue, it's a value issue, but you have to file some legal documentation to take it further, depending on if it's a house and small claims, or if it's a commercial building and you go to state Supreme Court.
So I think we're going to ask this question again later, but it sounds like the earlier you think about this for your own self, if you are a potential customer, the better, because there may be an opportunity to do this informally rather than formally.
Exactly, Joe, and that's what I tell my clients. They see that the assessment review board meets, for instance, in the town of Amherst here in Western New York, the fourth Tuesday of May. So they say, well, I can call you a month ahead of time. Well, if you would have called me 6 months ahead of time, I could have done all my work, prepared the case, met with the assessor, given the assessor a chance to do their homework, and have multiple meetings if necessary, have an inspection of the property if necessary, do whatever it takes to come to a conclusion. And here's what I tell my clients. I would much rather have the assessor making the decision, because they're knowledgeable, they're trained in that market, obviously, their experience is there. When you go to in front of an assessment review board, quite frankly, you don't know who these folks are that will be hearing your case. They're hearing it for the first time. They are giving you usually a 10-minute window to make your presentation. If you've got a written report, they're supposed to read through it, understand it, comprehend it, and hopefully agree with it. But it's very, very difficult for folks to make that kind of a quick decision. So if you can give yourself time with the assessor, it's a tremendous advantage.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number 4, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
Don, when we were talking earlier, you mentioned about this evolution into your business, and I'm curious about what it required in terms of financing. You had a business before, so it probably wasn't too difficult to make the evolution from a financial point of view.
That's correct. It wasn't. It was kind of a low overhead business. I'm a self-employed professional, if you will. It's interesting, though, when I transitioned from a regular appraisal firm where I was a partner, I started this business with a couple of partners who were investors, and the idea was that there was a niche that needed to be filled in the marketplace, and that was a professional appraiser who could represent property owners in tax assessment appeals on a contingency basis. In fact, I used to do appraisal work while I was in the appraisal business for people trying to challenge their assessment, but they would ask me for an appraisal, and I might have to charge them a couple $1,000s, and they said, well, wait a minute, what if this appraisal doesn't help me reduce my taxes? Well, it was pretty obvious that there was a disconnect there and that I could fill that void by working on a contingency basis. But anyway, to get back to my investor partners, the theory was let's build a model here in Western New York that works, and then we'll take it on the road across the country. They happen to be in a retail business that would lend itself to that. What we discovered after a year, maybe 2 years of being in business, very, very productive and profitable here in Western New York, but our model didn't work as well when we examined other markets. And that's because other markets don't have the high taxes that New York State does. Other markets, especially at that time, didn't have problems with property values plummeting. In fact, it was kind of a growth spurt at that time. So they had appreciating properties and low tax rates. Here in Western New York, we've had somewhat depressed property values and very high tax rates. So this market works extremely well. So it wasn't long before the investors, parted with their profits and let me go on with my business. And that's where we are now.
Well, we didn't talk about this earlier, but since there are plenty of properties that went through this foreclosure process, do you think you would have been able to help someone who was faced with that issue, who found their properties plunging? Would they have been able to retain you at that time to maybe get the reassessment so their taxes weren't so bad?
Well, probably, Joe, and certainly there was a need for that, but I think in those markets, because it was so widespread that it was almost handled at the municipal level, where here in Western New York, I'll find my clients calling me on individual cases where there's individual problems, if you will, that the assessor might not be aware of. If we're talking about some of the markets in Florida, for instance, they plunged en masse, and therefore the assessment office knew they had to respond by lowering assessments just to keep these properties at a reasonable level of value, and I think they responded pretty fairly. So would there have been a niche? Maybe a quick niche, but certainly not long-term. And now the properties seem to be rebounding down
right
there, so you can see the Western New York market, I always say I'm an economist at heart. When taxes go up, values go down, and taxes here are so high that it just suppresses property values.
Right. Well, this brings us to the issue of marketing. It might have been fun to market in Florida and maybe spend some time there in the winter months, but what kinds of marketing activities do you get involved with?
Well, I try to take my story on the road. As a sole proprietor, my best marketing is personal, it's word of mouth, but it's presentations. I go to the real estate offices locally for all the different large real estate companies, and their network of agents pretty much recognizes me as the local go-to person when they have problems with their taxes and assessments. I speak to investor groups. I've taught courses at UB, or I should say classes at UB, when they call me in as a guest speaker and talk about what I do. So, and I advertise in niche newspapers, for instance. If a revaluation is coming up in Amherst, I'll be in the Amherst Bee and I'll do that type of thing. But as I've told you before, Joe, it's interesting, in my business, 95% of the people out there, property owners, don't need what I do. I can't help them because they're fairly assessed. There's a small percentage that are unfairly assessed, and so mass marketing sometimes doesn't work for what I do.
Well, we talked about the kinds of examples of some situations you've been involved with that people did have a need, or a commercial outfit had a need. Can you give us some examples of those?
Sure. Well, I'll even start with the residential side. I've had a lot of agents call me recently that are marketing a home, putting it on the market for sale, and their list price has come down from where it started to a point where it's now below the assessed value of the house.
Wow.
And now the tax has become an issue for a prospective buyer, and I try to work with the municipalities, even if it's off-season, to get them to put in writing, we will lower the assessment to whatever the negotiated level is that will give a buyer some peace of mind that their taxes will be lower if they were to buy this house. So I always tell the assessor, you're an important part of the marketing of these properties, and you need to get directly involved and not wait until after someone buys it and then hopes they can get their assessment reduced, because you know, the banks won't go for that and the escrows and people can't afford it. So, but other types of users, commercial users especially, there's the owner user of a commercial building, and they're a very good type of client because that's someone that might have their own plumbing business or contracting business or manufacturing business where they don't look at the property, the building, the warehouse, the plant facility as an investment so much as their business. So they don't manage it as an investment property, and many times they lose track over the years of what it's really worth in the market. And I'm telling you, most of these owners overestimate the value of the property just because it serves their needs so well. Market value is really what the market would pay for your property, not what it's worth to you. And there's a huge difference there. So many times I'll come in and say, you know, you're assessed at $1 million, where I really don't think you could sell this for more than $750. And they're happy to lower their taxes. They're not always happy to hear that news. But the second type of owner would be an investor, someone that manages properties, and they tend to be a little more in tune and on top of their assessment and tax situation because that's part of what they do as a business. The large professional investment management companies pay a little closer attention, although I certainly do work for them as well. I do work for utility companies. When they either condemn land, take easements over land for utility lines, they need to have the owner sign off on what their offer for that easement is going to be. And if the owner objects, then proof has to be submitted and even, you know, go to court and do battle that way. And conversely, I represent many property owners who don't like the offer they're receiving from the utility companies, and I'll represent them. And ultimately, we're all trying to do the same thing. This is not an adversarial situation. I'm a professional appraiser, and whether I'm acting as a consultant for my client and or if I'm being a neutral appraiser, either way, we're trying to get to what's fair.
One of the fellows we know who specializes in real estate often uses this as an example. He says, let's say your property is assessed currently for $200,000, but the fair market value is really $3 million, and you're thinking about buying that piece of property. And so you call the assessor and you say, I'm going to buy this property for $300,000. What's my tax liability going to be? And he says, well, it's going to go up to be assessed at $300,000. Is that something you could get involved with? Is that a situation that shouldn't happen, that does happen?
Yes, exactly. And too many times, Joe, I get the phone call after the fact when I can't be effective on their behalf. And every office I go to when I do my presentation, I leave the real estate agents with this advice. Always tell your client to expect their assessment to go up to purchase price if purchase price is higher than assessed value. I don't know the time frame. It could be within 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. But to have it happen and not plan on it can be disastrous, and it's very difficult after the fact. As we said before, when taxes go up, value goes down. So if you paid $300 for a $200,000 property, when the assessment and taxes go up to $300, it may no longer be worth $300. But since you've made that commitment, it's very difficult to undo that. But yes, people should look into that before they make a purchase decision.
Okay. Yeah, but you would expect that's a normal. I mean, that's a normal expectation that if you buy something for more than it's assessed for, your assessment's going to go up kind of as a matter of fact.
Yes, that's what I say. And again, it's amazing how different towns in the same county have different assessment procedures. And even if they're not procedures from a legal perspective, the way they operate, the way they enact the procedures are all different. How frequently they reassess properties. Equalization rates are different. For instance, the town of Amherst that we're sitting in now, or Clarence or Lancaster, they have 100% equalization rates, meaning the assessed value is supposed to equal the fair market value of the property. It's easy to understand that. There are towns like Cheektowaga, for instance, has a 62% equalization rate. Why? Well, there's stories behind that. But many towns have fractional assessments. They keep their values current, but they keep them current at that level. So, for instance, if your assessment is $62,000 in Cheektowaga, the town feels your property is worth $100,000. Now, that can be very confusing, and people think they're fairly assessed when, quite honestly, they're not. So, it always helps to understand what your tax bill really means and how to interpret it.
Well, because you're such a specialist and you're the go-to guy in Western New York, do you have many competitors?
Yeah, many competitors? No, there's a few, but what's interesting, I feel like I've established a real niche in that I'm the, I won't say only, but certainly by far the largest appraiser that specializes in tax assessment representation. My competitors are primarily attorneys, quite honestly, who take the premise that if the town doesn't give us what we want, we'll sue them. And as I've said before, and I'll say again, my mantra, this is not a tax issue, this is not a legal issue, this is a value issue. And whether we are in the preliminary discussions with the assessor, I'm the one that will show the comparable sales and the per square foot analysis and the adjustment grid and the pro forma operating statement for income properties, and I'll get it down to a bottom line and capitalize it. Those are all valuation criteria that an assessor and I are speaking the same language. If I go in front of the assessment review board, it's the same thing. I'm giving them the proof they need to make a decision and defend it. If we have to file a lawsuit because the town didn't give us what we wanted, it's still a value issue. Paperwork has to be filed. You know, legal representation certainly has to be part of it, but what drives the heart of the issue is what's the value and what kind of proof do you have to support your position? And if we can show the town's attorney that our proof is better than your proof, they're going to settle that case pretty quickly and not throw away good money. So again, a lawyer may file the paperwork, but it's the appraiser that's going to win the case.
Great. So it sounds to me like with all this paperwork, is this something you can do mostly from your office, or do you actually have to visit the property and talk with, you know, the tenants or whatever it is that might be involved?
Well, I always start from my office trying to discern whether we have a reasonable case. If it's an income-producing property, I try to look at a three-year history of Schedule Cs, the income and expenses for the property. I look at the current rent roll. I understand the quality of the tenants. Are they, you know, national type tenants, or are they the local mom and pops? How long are they under lease for? You know, the types of services and that provided in the building. I look at comparable sales, per square foot values. Is it within a reasonable range from my experience? Do I visit the property? Yeah, and the larger the case, obviously, the more important it is. Get the interior condition and photographs. Again, I always say, Joe, when I go in front of an assessor or a review board, my biggest role is to educate them. I'm going to educate them on the building itself. Here's what it looks like on the outside, on the inside. Here's how it's functionally laid out. Here are the tenants or the users of the property. Here are sales in the marketplace and photographs of those sales. Here are the per square foot values, and then I make adjustments for condition or age or whatever, parking, ceiling height, overhead doors, all those kinds of variables. And when I'm done, I have proof in front of the decision makers as to what I think the appropriate value is and why. And I give them every opportunity to either ask questions or add sales of their own or dispute what I have to say. And I always say to them, if you disagree with me, tell me now. Don't just send me a letter later saying that you're denying me. Give me a chance to justify my position, because I truly feel that I'm educating them on the property. And I wouldn't be there if I didn't have a case. I'm not going to waste my time, money, and my reputation, quite frankly, to go in front of these assessors and review boards if I don't have a strong case that I can prove.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number four, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
Don, one of the reasons we got together was because I found a presentation you made fascinating, and I'm finding this just equally as fascinating. So tell me a little bit about what makes your services unique in your marketplace.
Oh, I believe I'm unique and offer a very niche service that's needed in the marketplace. Folks who have problems with their taxes and assessment, first of all, need to be given guidance as to what the appropriate channels are to, you know, challenge these assessments, see if they have a case, take it through the process. Number two, I protect them from spending money unless they benefit, because I only charge if I'm successful. And number three, I'm an experienced appraiser that can handle the valuation process for them very professionally. So, you know, many times I'll talk to clients, and after we go through a discussion, they'll recognize that, you know, they really don't have a complaint, and that they're satisfied with that, and they appreciate the time and effort. But for those that need professional services, to be an appraiser and represent you in a tax assessment appeal, I think is the best of both worlds.
So earlier when I introduced you, we said that, you know, you focus on properties in Western New York. But it seems to me that if someone from Utah or Hong Kong or someplace wanted to get started with this process and needed some good advice, they've heard your program, how would you help them?
Well, I would help them by giving them guidance and asking them questions about their local assessment procedures, but certainly making sure they were on track. I do offer the service that if folks call me and we go through the process, I would represent them over the phone to the assessor. I would could possibly do some remote research on the property and advocate for them from a distance. To the extent that I can be helpful, I am happy to do that. And again, I feel that I have this niche expertise, and people just feel like they need somebody to help them. And again, you can call an attorney, and they know the legal process, but they won't be able to discuss value with the assessor. They won't be able to talk to the assessment review board. I've even put together written analyses and send them off to remote places to assessment review boards for their consideration when they meet. So I think I can help most anybody anywhere. Of course, it's not on a regular basis, but there are situations I can be of help.
Right. So if we were working, if I was at a distance and we were working together, well, would I do most of the collection of information, or would you be asking me for things like tax rolls or something that I could gather locally?
Most of the information I would need for my valuation analysis I could probably get online, so I'm not worried about that at all. I would ask you for the specifics of your property, that being the condition issues, the rentals, if there are any. I would, if you knew anything in the local marketplace that would be of interest to me, so I can understand your neighborhood and issues like that. But comparable sales data, per square foot values, comparable assessments of other properties in the area, I can do that research from here.
So it sounds like customers call you mostly when the alarm bell goes off.
They do, and I always say there's red flags, Joe. There's those things that should pique your interest and get your attention and make you step back and take a look at your situation. Number one would be a change of assessment. If you get a letter that says your assessment is being changed, okay, let's see if it's fair and reasonable and what it's based on. Number two, if you find out that your taxes maybe aren't in line with some of your neighbors or people that have properties like yours, you find that out for some reason, that's a red flag. Any of the issues before that I said aren't the primary issues that you focus on, they're not primary, but they might get your attention and cause you to call me, and then we can work through them. So I think anything that makes you look at your tax bill should make you give me a call and see where you stand.
Okay, I'm going to ask you now, although we're going to review it later. So if I want to get in touch with you to start a relationship with your firm, what do I do? How do I reach you?
Okay, well, my website is loweryourpropertytaxes.com, which I think is easy to remember. And my email address is on there, and my phone number and that. So I welcome the contact.
So say it again so we're clear. Sure. Sometimes it's difficult, I find, when I'm listening to the radio and I hear something.
Okay.
It goes by too quickly, and I can't get my pen and pencil.
Sure. It's loweryourpropertytaxes.com. And again, Don Griebner, and my phone number is 716-634-8977. 716-634-8977.
Perfect.
Yeah. And I also do feasibility studies for properties. This doesn't sound like appraisal work per se, but in my market area, you can almost see it out the window, there's a proposed six-story hotel that's proposed to be built, and it's gone through the approval process. And the neighbors in the area that built homes within the past 10 years are up in arms about this six-story monstrosity that's now going to be outside their backyard. Well, I was actually hired by the developer to do two things. One was to do a study of the impact on surrounding property values of other high-rise buildings in the Amherst market, and I think I was able to find four or five that were five and six stories high. And what I found, interestingly enough, was I could not quantify a discernible impact on value after a high-rise building was constructed. There was no evidence in the market. But number two, and to me almost the more important point, was the property on which the hotel is going to be constructed has been zoned for that use for over 50 years. It's general business zoning. These folks who built beautiful homes, kind of up on an escarpment a little bit, nice views, didn't recognize the fact that they're building right next door to general business zoning that's multiple acres and already has one two-story hotel on it with room for another one, obviously. So there was no zoning change. There was no rug pulled out from under them or change in the comprehensive plan of the town or anything like that. This was in place before they bought their land, before they acquired the lots and put a shovel in the ground to build their beautiful homes. So that's what I call due diligence, Joe. They have to know that their surroundings could change over time, and it's up to them to understand what could be their next-door neighbor in the years to come.
So if somebody's thinking about building a house, one of the things that they should do is look at the zoning around them and other factors we talked about, power lines and things like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, just because there's no power lines right now, you should investigate whether there's an easement by the electric company to put power lines up there. And again, it's amazing to me how people don't do more due diligence. Maybe just because I'm coming from an appraisal perspective, I look at surrounding areas and zonings and read the zoning code to see what's allowed. So you don't get caught after the fact.
Great. Yeah. You mentioned the internet and doing research on the internet. Tell us about your use of information technology and how you would value it in terms of the quality of it.
Okay. The first thing that helps me as an appraiser is access to municipal data. In New York State, and especially in Western New York, the towns and the cities are outstanding with their database of property information. And they've really made it a point to make it accessible to property owners. So you can get online and check by address your property, the square footage, the bedroom and bathroom count, the age of the home, the lot size, even outbuildings and pools and things are listed there. And not to mention your assessed value, your tax bills can be brought up online now. So all the information you need is there. And I always tell my customers, the first thing we have to do is make sure the town has correct information. Many times, you know, what's a two-story foyer is counted as a second-floor square footage or something like that. And, you know, we have to make sure the data is accurate. But for me, from an appraisal perspective, the research is so much faster and easier than it was when I started 28 years ago. So I can be much more efficient. And that's what allows me to run a business like Real Property Services, where I can work on a contingency basis because I can come to conclusions much more rapidly, and I can do it without expending nearly the amount of time that I would have to in years past. So, it works out very well for all concerned.
Well, I was hoping you might talk about some of these sites like Zillow or the other services that have property information on it. What do you think of those? Are they of any value to you, or would they be of value to just a homeowner in general?
Well, what I say about those sites, and I won't even mention ones by name, but I think they're good for guidance. I don't think they are good for ultimate conclusions. Again, it's the red flag scenario. If you see something on a website that you can access that talks about the value of your home and it tells you that your assessment is too high, right there, that should tell you I need to look into this further. I need to verify what they're saying here. Remember, what you're getting mostly online from valuation services is the macro view. It's the top-down view. It's with no intimate knowledge of your property. They've never been in your house, just like the assessor. The assessments on properties for municipalities are the macro approach. They're modeling systems that are used in statistical analysis to come up with values per square foot. But they don't know the condition of your home, whether it's been updated, finished basement, unless you needed a permit, things of that nature. So it's a good starting point, but do not rely on it, as gospel. And that's where, you know, I can come in, hopefully, and clarify the answers that you're now asking. So I think it's a good starting. I think it's wonderful. It gives people the impetus to look further into their situation. So that's a good thing.
Great. Let's talk a little bit more about information technology, maybe other than spreadsheets, which I'm sure you use a lot. Are there other technology tools that you use that you find valuable?
Well, obviously, Google certainly helps. Having photographs, both aerials of neighborhoods and, go down to street level. Before I'd have to have people describe things to me over the phone and try and get an idea of what I was working with. But now, even before I go out on an inspection, I can identify comparable sales in the area that are similar in appearance to what I'm going to look at. And it's such an advantage to have a head start. And when a property owner calls me on the phone, I can say, yeah, I'm looking at a picture of your house or commercial building as we talk, and I can see what you're telling me. And it gets me to ask them more questions because I'm more prepared for that. So very, very helpful, yeah.
Okay. Do you see anything coming down the pipeline in the next year or two that, from a technology point of view, that might impact your business?
Let's see. From a technology point of view, no, not from my perspective, Joe. I don't see anything other than the availability of data. And when I can get a photograph of a property and I can get all the physical characteristics of it, like square footage and age and bedroom, bathroom count and overhead doors and ceiling height, all of that, as long as the municipal records are updated. And when towns do reassessments, people get up in arms. Oh my God, the town is going to do a reassessment of every property. And I say that's wonderful because it's updating their database. So it's not a new form of information to me, but it's updated information. So it clarifies some of the, either missing pieces or it updates some of the errors, and it makes sure that our data is accurate going forward. And the other thing is sales data. When a sale happens, it doesn't take as long to get into the system, so to speak, so that we know pretty quickly. Multiple listing is outstanding. I mean, the realtors provide that for both a marketing tool and as sales data, and we use that regularly because we're getting the information before the sale even closes.
How about social media tools? Do you use anything?
Well, my kids have introduced me to a few things, but they're certainly more astute at it than I am. I do have a Facebook page and things like that, but that's an area I should probably get more involved in. You know what I find as a sole proprietor, Joe, and you're exactly the kind of help that I need, so I'm begging you, but I find that I'm involved in production, I'm involved in finance, I'm involved in administration, I'm involved in marketing, and when you focus on the work side of it, you tend to let the marketing side of it go. And that's where a business like mine could certainly use some dedicated professional marketing assistance.
Well, we'll have to talk after the program.
Please.
I'm sure we can help you. Any other kind of productivities you see that you might be using in the future that are web-based or digital?
I do some of my marketing or digging for properties based on online databases of real estate. So, for instance, I may search by property type, let's say condominiums, for instance. New York State has a law that says condominiums are to be assessed based on their rental value. I don't know if you knew that, but every other property in New York, real property, is assessed based on its market value. Condominiums are not. And there's a long history to it, but without getting into it, it's based on their rental value. Very, very confusing. They tend to be assessed significantly below their purchase price or their real value, usually in the 50 to 60, maybe 65% range of their full market value. That's because rentals don't keep pace. If you think about your home, for instance, if you went to rent out your home, could you get enough rent to justify the value you could get if you went to sell it? And the answer is 9 times out of 10, no, you couldn't. So a rental value will typically be lower. That's a break that are given condominium owners in New York State. But condominium owners and the association that runs them don't understand the process of how you go through it's almost like valuing an apartment complex. It's rental income minus vacancy minus expenses, and there's a capitalization rate, and each of those assumptions has a lot of variability to it. So I will troll, if you will, for condominium associations that I see sales prices online, I see assessments online, I do the ratio comparison, I say, wow, this seems a little high, maybe I can be of help. So it's really helped me in my targeted marketing, Joe, to use that type of online service.
Yeah, excellent. I've got a question to ask you in a minute.
Yeah.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number 4, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
Don, I have a customer that owns 11 buildings that have 4 apartments in them each. And so right now it's an apartment complex. And we've talked about how to minimize expenses in order to, maximize the value of the property for future sale. And so I'm wondering if it would make sense to have a conversation with this current property owner to think about, or maybe making the transition to have these be condominiums, because they're all standalone buildings. There are 11 of them, each with 4 apartments in them. They could become condominiums, I would think.
That's the real question, if they're allowed to become condominiums. Uh-huh. Now, some towns like Amherst, for instance, enacted 20 years ago a local law, meaning a town of Amherst law, that says condominiums can only be classified as such if they are new construction. We will not allow condominium conversions as they used to. There used to be quite a few apartment buildings being converted to condominiums to take advantage of the tax savings. You can build condominiums from scratch now, but you cannot convert. Now, that's Amherst. I don't know where we're talking about, but each municipality has their own regulations regarding that. So that's what you'd have to look into.
I see. Well, this doesn't happen to be in Amherst, so maybe there should be a discussion there. I'll give you the referral.
Thank you.
In a little bit. One of the things that we try to have our listeners gain value from is the idea that, are there some things that you tried that didn't work? I think you mentioned the situation where you found that in other states, that especially high growth states, there might not have been an opportunity there. Is there anything else other than that example that you felt, you've had a challenge for and that you weren't able to overcome? And what lesson did you learn from that?
The challenges I face are mostly size related. I'm right sized for, customer service and the personal touch, and you're always talking to the owner and you're talking to the person who's going to represent you. And then I'm undersized based on the amount of obligations that go along with the business that I do, and I have peak seasons. So I get very busy in the spring leading up to the summer because that's the tax assessment season, and I get somewhat overwhelmed. And it's tough to have, part-time help or whatever. I like to be hands-on. So those are my challenges, Joe. How to spread out the workflow and put enough emphasis into the areas that will keep churning in the business, but not take on too much, but yet have enough. And so those are my challenges. I feel like I have a service that everybody wants, but not everybody needs or can take advantage of. So how I market that and use it, and sometimes I think I'd be better off if I joined a larger firm, like a law firm or an accounting firm, and became kind of an adjunct part of their business, where they could use me as an in-house source for appraisal work, assessment work, whatever need be, and they'd have a built-in clientele, and I would have the support staff to go along with it. But on the other hand, I'd lose a lot of the freedoms and capabilities that I have being a one-man shop.
Well, if it's any consolation, I've been consulting in this field of small businesses for almost 40 years, and every small business owner, even if they have a staff, as you have some people helping you as a staff person, has this same issue. They're the experts in the business, and they're always concerned about how do I find somebody else that knows some or most of what I know that can do some or most of what I do
exactly.
Effectively.
Right.
and is reliable and so on. And really that leads me to a question that we didn't talk about this before, but as all of us are aging, some of us need to think about finding someone to adapt or adopt our business for the future. Do you have a succession plan? Is there some idea you have in mind about what might happen in the future when you're ready to kick back and go to Florida and enjoy the sunshine?
Yeah. Is there a plan? No, there is not. My thought process has been one of two different possible areas. One would be merging my operation in with a larger legal or accounting firm or real estate company. And the other would be to sell my practice to someone who has the same background as I do in appraisal, but I've established a pretty wide market following, and they could take advantage of that, and there could be some transition time in between there. So, again, I think I've established a very productive business that fills a niche, and I have a very good following. You asked me before, do you get a lot of repeat customers? And I said, I get a lot of repeat customers, but they're not quick in succession. I mean, I might help someone right now, and 5 years later, they'll call me back because their assessment got changed again. And that's wonderful. And, of course, they're always telling their neighbors and friends, but that's the way my business works. And one of the other challenges you mentioned is mine is a seasonal business, and it's also a contingent business. So there's a lot of risks involved. I get very busy now, but if I file a grievance right now, I won't have a hearing until the end of May. We won't get the results until the 1st of July. And then we're going to see if we're successful and we can send out a bill. So how's that for some risk involved? You've got to know the strength of your cases, and you've got to get a lot of them settled up front without having to wait the majority of that time. Now, it does help that the city of Buffalo, for instance, one of the large municipality around here, has a grievance filing in December and hearings in January. So that's kind of the winter focus, if you will. But that's another challenge for my business.
So if someone with similar skills to you was listening, and they said, oh, gee, that makes sense. Maybe I should think about going into that business. There is some financial concern. We asked earlier about making the transition financially. You'd have to have a good kitty to get started and get your business developed and built.
That is true. What I think has allowed me to operate for this many years is my appraisal skill set has allowed me to do appraisals as well for non-tax issues. So therefore, as long as I keep that pipeline going, I have a steady stream from that source. But I don't do bank work and things like that. There's a little bit of a conflict when I work as a consultant on a contingency basis versus an appraiser for like bank work. So that's why this covers most of my year, but I also do regular appraisal work for commercial properties.
Yeah, great. I guess what I'm interested in finding out now is if you were thinking about telling a person that wanted to use your services, what first steps should they take? What would be the best way to get prepared to talk with you, and what would you suggest?
I think the most important thing for a client when they call me is to give me the basis for their concern. What is it that makes you think you have an assessment and tax problem? And some people call me and just say, oh, I see what you do. You lower property taxes. Can you help me? I'd like to lower my taxes. And that's where I said everybody wants what I do. And that's fine. Let's talk through it. But I always ask them, what makes you think you have a problem? Or before they even know what their assessment is, what do you think your property is worth? When did you buy it? Do you know of any houses or properties in the neighborhood that have sold? But I can particularly help those that have unique situations, especially commercial properties, vacancy issues, for instance. The town has no way of knowing what your vacancy level is. They don't know what your rental rates are, your per square foot rental rates. They don't know the quality of your tenants, if you will, if they're local or national. They don't know the length of the lease terms, which adds risk to a property. So on the commercial side, I always say we've got the advantage because we're going to educate the assessor on what's going on here. Now, many times I'll say to them, we don't want to educate the assessor because we're going to give them information that they could turn around and use against us. And I would never, obviously, take a client forward like that, so we protect them that way. But the more details about your property that are not publicly known, the more opportunities we have to take a look at that and see if it makes sense to go through with an assessment grievance. The assessor focuses their valuations primarily on sales. And they'll do sales per square foot, or they'll value, you know, sales per acre, or whatever their point of valuation is. But they can't do the income side of things because they just don't know the information. So that's where, you know, we can educate the assessor and help our client.
Great. And I'm sure if they call you and you ask them these questions, you can kind of give them the right direction based on our earlier conversation. So tell us again how to get in touch with you. What's the best way to make contact and talk with you personally?
Great. Again, my website is loweryourpropertytaxes.com, and you can call me directly at area code 716-634-8977. And my name is Don Griebner. That's spelled G-R-I-E-B-N-E-R. And I'd be happy to talk with you. And I find that most conversations, we come away with just a higher level of understanding of the process, of the valuation of your property. And I'm not telling you that I can appraise your property over the phone. That's not the issue at all. But we can get a fairly concise range of value that gives us an idea of whether we can go forward and be productive in this process. And I think that's all people want. They want peace of mind that a concern that's in the back of their mind, or maybe at the forefront of their mind, is being addressed. They've talked it through. They now can go back and have ease when they pay their tax bill and say, you know what, I may not like it, but I know I'm not being over-assessed, and it's a fair number. So I think it's a very valuable service. And that's why I enjoy what I do, because when I was an appraiser, I called it a cost center. People had to come to me to get an appraisal, to go to a bank to get a mortgage, and I was a component part that they didn't really want, just something else that's on the fee list of the banks. Now, there's no risk in the fee structure. There's a lot of upside potential. There's certainly the ability to understand the process more than when they started. They now have a relationship, and I tell people all the time, we've now got a relationship. Please call me with any questions. And that's what I am a lot of times, just a sounding board. They want to ask me questions. Sometimes I deal with associations, condominium associations, homeowners associations. I go in and talk to them and explain to them, here's how condominiums are valued. Let me explain to you the nuances of it, and then you can determine whether you have a case. I do a lot of feasibility studies, and I go in front of town boards, for instance, when property developers are trying to get something approved, and I'll talk about what the tax consequences are, or the value issues in the neighborhood from something being constructed. And sometimes I find that the people that are screaming the loudest know the least about the issues, and if they would understand what's behind valuation, if they would understand what's behind financial feasibility, if they'd understand the assessment process, they would certainly be more informed when they went to make their claims against the town. So that's really, I think, where I could be a real good resource to people, just teaching them about the whole process of valuation and assessment.
Yep. Great, Don. This has been great. I assume our listeners, all those of who have stuck with us for an hour, will find this as interesting as I have. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. Thank you, buddy.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number four, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6. Our program, The Leading Edge of Supply Chain Management, was brought to you by Supply Chain Optimizers. SCO is a logistics company known for providing personalized, end-to-end cost-saving tools and techniques focused on improving the hundreds of opportunities firms have hidden within their supply chain activities. If you want to download 15-minute segment podcasts of this program, simply go to www.networkforsuccess.com. That's network, the number four, success.com. This program was produced and directed by Your Network for Success and is copyrighted as of March 11th, 2013.